Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud. As always, we are available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Stitcher, or head on over to the website AmericaOutLoud.com. We have a very serious show tonight with U.S. interpreter Fanu Milat, who is a former interpreter for the U.S. Army whose family members are stranded in Afghanistan. He's a proud Afghan-American now located in Texas, but his family has still been left behind in Afghanistan. Very tragic situation, and we're looking forward to hearing what Fanu has to say to update us on the events over in Afghanistan, which has just been an absolute disaster for the Joe Biden administration. We've seen weapons left behind, service dogs left behind, military members left behind, Americans left behind, and so many of these great people from Afghanistan who have helped the American military for over 20 years now are now in jeopardy because of the Taliban regime. Just a bad situation all around there in Afghanistan. And the Joe Biden administration has been missing for the most part. It's been very hard to get this guy in front of a camera talking about Afghanistan. And now he is very adamant on shifting the attention to something else besides his foreign policy disaster in Afghanistan. Rob, what have been your thoughts on what we have seen from the Joe Biden administration thus far?
Well, first of all, I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. And as you said, tonight's show is really relevant. It's unfortunate the chain of events have brought us to this moment. But your opening, Andrew, I must say, was right on point as to what we're going through and what Joe Biden's administration has failed to do. We've been in Afghanistan for 20 years. Everyone knows that. We went there because of 9/11 under President Bush, the second Bush. We had a mission to avenge the death of nearly 3,000 Americans and other individuals who died on our soil on 9/11. The anniversary of 9/11 is right upon us. We also went there to stomp out terrorists, the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and whatever else is over there. Unfortunately, it was not a successful war. We went, we thought we did what we needed to do, but we messed up when we started trying to nation build. And we have had two military individuals to come on, Joe Kent, a Green Beret, and Colonel Julie Hall. And they both said echoed the exact same thing. You go, you do your mission, and you come back home. But something that I found was interesting that Joe had said to us is that these generals that are there, they always have an ulterior motive. And their motive is to make as much money as possible and then retire, join some defense contractors board and make more money. And he said that, I want Americans to be made aware of this. So the fall of Afghanistan, the deliberate withdrawal, was a disaster. And Joe was warned of this. And as Joe Kent said, President Trump had laid out a plan how we would withdraw back in January. But there are some conditions. One of the biggest conditions, if you lay a hand on any American, we will blow you to kingdom come. You will cease to exist. Do you read us loud and clear? Unequivocally, that's the message. Now, what happened in November 2020 when the election was stolen, as we all know now, let's just be honest, it was given to Joe in back rooms by the media, big tech, and some corporations through mail-in ballots and all these other things. Joe came to power. Joe, who didn't know what he was doing, and he still doesn't know what he's doing. So when he came in, he was going to champion the cause still. We're going to leave Afghanistan. Again, everyone gets it. We were all for it. But what we weren't for is the way we left Afghanistan. So according to published reports that are coming out now, Sleepy Joe actually spoke to his military intelligence and said, I know that Trump wants us out by May. I want to extend this, and I want to get us out before September 11th. Do you think the city will hold, not the city, but the country will hold within those 3 months' time? Because, see, Joe was looking at a photo opportunity. Joe was looking at coming out on 9/11 and saying, look at what I did. And Trump couldn't do it. He only talked about it. But as Joe Kent told us, had Joe stuck with the plan that Donald Trump had laid out, this wouldn't have happened. So what does Joe do? He speaks with the Afghanistanian president and says, you know, it's a disaster over there. What's happening? But we can't let people know. We want to pretend as if though everything is okay. We want to get our people out. So he talks to the military elite, them not wanting to leave because that's their cash cow. Why would they want to leave? We need to stay here and make more money. So when Joe kept pressuring them and them thinking, as we were told, Andrew, by Joe Kent, that, wait a minute, he wants to leave? Okay, leave. Screw it. We'll show him. His own military generals. We will show him. They left, and look at what happened. A complete disaster. 13 American soldiers fail, lost their lives, all in their 20s. I don't think not a one was over 25. Lost their lives because of Joe Biden's screwed up plan to leave and his generals not caring. Okay, we'll show him. We'll just get out. 13 soldiers. Now, some will point to, well, when Trump was president, look at all the people that died. Okay, we know that. But it wasn't because of a withdrawal. It was because we were there in those areas, Afghanistan and Iraq. His decisions didn't cause lives. Because if you recall, he gave Syria a warning, the red line that Barack Obama had drew in the line that Syria danced all over and probably even pissed on. They didn't do that for Trump because Trump bombed them. So going back to Afghanistan, 13 lives. And then Americans left behind enemy lines. Whatever happened to no man left behind, no Americans left behind. We take care of our brethren. Can you imagine? And while all this is going on, Joe and his staff, they're on vacation. They didn't want to be bothered. And when they did come out, Andrew, they were stumbling. Their lips were quivering. We don't know what happened. And it was deliberate. This was all planned. It was planned for 13 soldiers to lose their lives. It was planned to leave Americans behind enemy lines. It was planned to leave $1 billion worth of artillery with the enemy so that they could use it against us, biometric equipment, so that they could find out who helped the Americans so that they could torture them, which we know is happening right now. And then finally, when Joe comes out to address the American people, he blames the Americans. Well, we told them back in March, you need to come out. And some of them didn't want to come out. They wanted to stay there. So we warned them. So we executed our plan. We did everything that we're supposed to have done. You're blaming Americans for wanting to stay in hostile territory, Joe Biden? And then his Secretary of State, the exact same thing. Like, wait a minute. These are Americans. We take care of our own. But right now, what you're doing is you're flying over individuals from Afghanistan. We know nothing about them, no background check. What about the interpreters? What about the people that worked along beside us, the people that we do know? What about bringing them home with our American citizens? You do know that they're Americans, Joe. You do know that for 20 years, these interpreters worked alongside our soldiers so that our soldiers would not be in harm's way. You do realize that. But no, Joe wants to blame them, and his Secretary of State wants to blame them, and Lloyd Austin and General Milley. Have you no shame? It's appalling to think that they would leave Americans behind enemy lines. They would leave behind interpreters that worked with us, knowing that that was a death sentence, knowing that the Taliban would come after them. And then this whole thing with, well, no, this is ISIS-K, they're doing this. It doesn't make a rip. They're all terrorists, Joe. Have you learned nothing during your 50 years plus on the Hill? And these woke generals, if they weren't so busy trying to do diversity training and trying to be woke, maybe they would have seen the writing on the wall. But they did see it, remember, Andrew. They saw it. But they were pissed that Joe was taking them out of their cash cow. So it's like, screw him, let's go. Unbelievable to leave Americans there and people that worked along beside us there. And then so cavaliers say, no, we warned them, we told them to leave. And then of course the propaganda arm of the Democrat Party and Joe Biden's administration, the liberal media, fake news CNN, PMS, MSNBC, the Washington Post, the LA Times, the New York Times, they jumped on the bandwagon. Oh, okay, he did the best he could. We should be thankful because everyone wanted out of there and he got us out. Trump only talked about it. He got us out. yeah, we wanted to get out of there, but we didn't want to get out with our tail between our legs. We didn't want to get out being an embarrassment on the world stage. We didn't want to get out with our allies questioning the judgment of our so-called leader, President Biden. Well, they can't be bothered with that, they being the liberal media, because they're too busy still trying to look woke. So now they want to pivot away from all that and say, oh, it was their fault. We did the best we could. Next. Dangerous, extremely dangerous. This is directly from the book of Marxism. Blame the American culture. Blame the Americans. Blame the people. This is so Hitlerian. While no one else is looking, let's just pivot. Then we can continue with our disastrous plan to destroy the country, destroy America. Shame on you all. You are not patriots. And of course, Joe should be impeached. But of course, the Democrats control both houses. So you can bring it up. They're not going to listen to it. The same way they didn't want to hear about the 13 soldiers who died, did not want their names read on the floor of the House. But George Floyd, the man who was buried in a gold casket, who got like a huge send-off for a week. Oh, let's talk about him. Let's bow down. Nancy Pelosi trying to bow down, barely getting up from her knees. But the 13 soldiers that risked their lives, we don't want to hear their names, really. We don't want to know about the interpreters that we left behind. Shame, shame, shame. So tonight we have on the show someone who's experiencing this firsthand, an interpreter. And we thank him for his service to our military. Vanu Malat, how are you tonight?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm very well. How are, I hope everyone listening are doing okay. I'm very, first of all, saddened by the 13 lives, innocent lives that we have lost, including tens of other Afghan lives in the recent explosion in Kabul airport. And I'm also saddened by the tragic events that has happened the last 3 weeks. On August 15, Taliban took over Kabul. And after that, they got the entire country, Afghanistan. And it's been very tragic and disastrous.
So Fanu, let me ask you, how did you become an interpreter for the military?
On 2001, when America came to Afghanistan, I was a little boy. They were coming, the US forces, they were coming into our areas, building infrastructure, building schools, clinics, bringing us food. And I was always going and seeing the forces, US Army, Marines, and looking at them, that really created a passion and interest inside me. And that passion and interest grew. And I was always asking myself, how can I work with the US forces? And I was imagining myself to one day be their interpreter and translator. Therefore, after taking English classes when I was 16, 17, I was getting myself prepared to become an interpreter when I turned 18, because that was the eligible age. And on 18, I went to one of the military bases in Kabul, Afghanistan, where they were hiring translators and interpreters, and then took their tests. And luckily, I passed all the tests and I was offered with the interpreter role. And after being trained for a week, I was assigned to Kandahar, Afghanistan, the birthplace of Taliban regime.
So let me just get this right. 20 years ago, when the Americans came to Afghanistan, you were a kid. And you saw what was happening. And from looking at that, looking what they were helping your country rid itself of terrorist individuals, you wanted to give back and wanted to help. Is that correct?
That's completely correct. Yes. I want to give back. I want to help. And I want to save many other lives. I had the feeling of responsibility inside me. The feeling grew. And seeing if other countries or America coming to our country, Afghanistan, serving, building infrastructure, helping people and helping to secure the country, why wouldn't I also go and do my part, serve, save people's lives?
So you took the test, You went to the capital and then you were hired. How long were you an interpreter?
I was interpreter from May of 2012 till August of 2014.
Okay, and what happened after 2014?
Yes, 2014 in August, when I was released because they closed up the base that I was working and they didn't need any more translators because the troops were withdrawing from districts of Kandahar. So I went back to Kabul, and a week later, I just received an email from the U.S. Embassy and I was granted an SIV. And then I moved to the United States on September of 2014.
So you were granted an SIV after your work had ended in Kandahar. You went back to Kabul. You received a notification that you were granted an SIV. So you left, you came to America. Did you know exactly where you were going to come in America? Did you have friends or family here when you came, or was it all new?
Yes, I first came to Monterey, California. I had a couple of friends there. That's how I knew to go to Monterey, California. And then after living in Monterey for almost a half year, then I have some other friends here in Texas that told me how good Texas is. Then I moved to Texas.
So you've been in Texas ever since. Now, yes. Since coming in 2014, I think you said it was, had you ever gone back to Afghanistan to see your family?
No, I never.
Okay. And was it because you didn't want to, or it wasn't safe? Or why did you go back?
It wasn't safe. I haven't seen my family members for almost 7 years, and it wasn't safe to go. Working as an interpreter, you're considered infidel, and you're considered a servant for foreign forces, U.S. forces, and you're sentenced to death, you and your family members. And my family, we were exposed to the people living in the area, neighbors. Everyone knew that I was an interpreter, and it wasn't safe to go back.
So, but was it, okay, so you said everyone knew that you were an interpreter, and we're hearing the stories now about interpreters that are being tortured, that are being killed, and they're using the biometric apparatus to, you know, search them and find them down. So your family, we don't want to give a lot of information because we don't want them to jeopardize your family, put them in any more jeopardy than they're in already. Have you reached out to anyone at the State Department, or have they reached out to you to say, we will ensure the safety or try to ensure the safety of your family?
Yes, I have reached out to State Department through the representatives, senators here in the state of Texas. And I have been, they haven't got with me yet. And I haven't gotten a response from them.
Well, what we're going to do for you tonight is that we're going to put you in contact with another patriot who we recently interviewed. Her name is Colonel Julie Hall. And she had made us aware recently of a mission of a plane that was going backwards and forward to Afghanistan and rescuing individuals, interpreters. I don't know what exactly she will be able to do other than to put you in contact, hopefully with someone who could help you. But it's people like you that have worked in the trenches with our American soldiers, interpreting and helping them. You should be given priority along with the other Americans, as opposed to randomly selecting Afghanistanians to get on a plane to come here that we know absolutely nothing about. And just the other day, we learned that a few that came here are in fact terrorists. How the heck did they get on the plane? How the heck could we be so sloppy, our intel? Well, I'll tell you, Joe didn't care. He was only looking for a photo opportunity on 9/11. And whether he has it or not now, the media is going to still make it seem as if though he did the greatest thing that ever happened, and he didn't. He failed. He collapsed. He tripped. He stumbled. He slid. And as a result, America looks horrible to our allies. Shame on you, Joe Biden. Shame on you. This should have never happened, to put innocent lives in harm's way. How do you sleep at night, Fanu, knowing that your family is there?
Since August 15, that I learned that Taliban got the control of Kabul, and my family living in Kabul, Afghanistan, it's been really hard for me to sleep. I have been going through a lot of emotional situations, and it's been really hard, stressful, and I have been in a state of fear that what is going to happen to my family members once their location is being disclosed or exposed to the public. They have been hiding the last since August 15, since Taliban took over. It's been really stressful, and it's really hard to sleep, rest, or relax when you know that your family members are in danger.
Fanu, since this has all went down, have you been able to be in any contact with your relatives?
Yes, I have been having hard time contacting my family members, but I have been in contact with them through phone calls, messages, but the signals are very bad there. And the place that they're living right now, the signals are bad. So I'm contacting, having a hard time, but I'm in contact with them.
So I'm assuming that you left behind your parents, any siblings, aunts or uncles. What are you hearing from the Afghanistanians who have settled here? Are they concerned also for the safety of their loved ones? I would assume so.
Yes, definitely. I have a lot of friends here who were also interpreters and translators for the U.S. forces, and they have their family members left behind in Afghanistan, and I have been in contact with them too. We have been communicating, trying to find a way to evacuate our family members and get them to safe places.
Fanu, you mentioned that it's probably your parents. What relatives are stuck over there that you are most urgently wishing that Joe Biden and the State Department would step up and help get over to America?
Yes, the most urgently, what I'm really worried and I have fear are my parents, my two siblings. I have a younger sister and a younger brother who are younger than me. Those are four people that I'm asking help for from this administration and Department of State. I just want to get them out to a safe place.
So in our next segment, I'm going to go more in detail as to your job as an interpreter and what you did and everything. But having been in America so far, you just got here 2014. Was it difficult for you to settle in and become part of the culture? Did you find that difficult?
Definitely. When you are living your entire life in some other country and you're just being introduced to a new culture and a new place, you definitely have your hard times. But it's been really great to me because I'm open-minded. I'm open to any other cultures. I'm learning. I learn fast. And I love to being exposed to other cultures in other countries. And America is my love now. I love America. And I'm very grateful to be here in the United States.
And then your other contemporaries that are here, your friends, what are they saying? Have you guys formed a group that you can go to and you can talk about these concerns as far as what's happening to keep the communications going?
We haven't formed any group yet. I was thinking about it, but I'm in contact with three of my closest friends, and I'm communicating with them on a daily basis. If they're finding any way or if I'm finding any way, we're sharing with each other and giving our tries.
If you had a one-on-one right now to Joe Biden or the Secretary of State, what would your message be to them?
That's a great question. My message would be that, first of all, I am very disappointed that Afghanistan is being handed over to a terrorist group in a matter of 13 days and leaving all the equipments, all the ammunition, all the vehicles, airplanes, helicopters, weapons for a group that they're terror. They're creating terror in the society, in the country, and just do nothing about it and leaving all the equipments. I'm very disappointing on that because the world, a lot of countries, including America, they have been in Afghanistan for the last 20 years for a mission. And that mission was to eliminating these terrorist groups to bring security, not only in Afghanistan, but into the entire world, but ruining and destroying that accomplishment or that mission in 13 days is very disappointing. My message would be to, first of all, evacuate the US citizens that we have there. And then the allies, like myself, interpreters, we have a lot of interpreters left behind there with their family who are at risk of being tortured or slaughtered by the Taliban and other groups who are active in Afghanistan, to evacuate them and get them to a safe place and destroy the equipments, weapons, and many other weaponry that we have left behind in Afghanistan, to destroy them, not let other groups like Taliban use them, because they're going to use them back to destroy not only Afghanistan, but they can use them to destroy other countries in the world. That's my message for the president and his administration, because it's been very disappointing for me.
Yeah, Fanu is clearly disappointed, just like a lot of Americans all across the country are. And he has even more reason to be disappointed in what the Joe Biden administration has done. You're listening to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, which is available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Or check out AmericaOutLoud.com. Head on over to the website and download the America Out Loud app to listen to America Out Loud 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So you guys definitely want to head on over to AmericaOutLoud.com and download the America Out Loud app. We'll be back with more on After Dark with Rob and Andrew with our guest, Fanu Milat, who is a U.S. Army interpreter.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutLoud.com. Simply put, we're patriots who believe in Ronald Reagan's vision of a shining city on a hill. From sea to shining sea, you can listen in on iHeartRadio. Our free apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa, or our world-class media player. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
And we're back After Dark with Rob and Andrew. And our guest tonight is Fanu Milat, who was an interpreter in Afghanistan to our American soldiers. And as Andrew and I said in the second hour, the first half of the top of the hour, first segment, is that we thank him for his service to our soldiers, because we know that if it wasn't for the interpreters, the mission that they were on would have been extremely difficult So we thank him for his service and all of the other interpreters, as well as the other Afghanistanians that worked alongside our soldiers during those 20 years. I guess what we want to try to do right now is just to get a feel for what it was like living in Afghanistan. We see the pictures, we hear the horror stories, but this was Fanu's homeland and he grew up there. I don't know if he remembers what it was like before the Americans came, but we're going to see if he could share some of that with us. So Fanu, what was the country like before Americans came into Afghanistan? I mean, we live in a country that's widespread, as you've seen. I don't know how many states you've been to, but it's just, we're all out there and we have freedom and democracy and whatnot. Then in a country like Afghanistan that doesn't have all everything that we have, what was it like for you growing up?
Sure. I was born in 1994 in Kabul. In 1996, Taliban took over the country and they had the control over country until 2001 when America and the other countries, they came to Afghanistan and secured Afghanistan. It was really hard, especially living in a very poor family. My father has been dealing with rheumatoid arthritis with that disease for the last 25 years. And he is not being able to work really hard physically. And I going to the school, and at age of eight, I had that feeling of responsibility that I need to support and help my family members and bring some food to the table and help my father. So I started working on the side, beside that I was going to school, on the streets of Kabul, selling essential clothing like socks for men and women, and helping my father bring in food to the table. The economy was very bad. It's been really tough, not only for myself, my family, but for the entire people of Afghanistan. Getting out of the war in 2001 and starting a new life after Americans came to Afghanistan. It's been really tough. The economy was tough and people started going back to school. They kind of got their freedom back because during the Taliban regime, especially females, women, girls, they were not allowed to go to schools, not even until sixth grade. It was hard for, especially for women, but after 2001, they got their freedom back. And they started continuing their education, seeing people having freedom, people being able to bring their dreams in reality. That's been the situation we have been dealing the last 20 years. We have had freedom. Afghanistan was improving, developing. They were building the city's infrastructure until what happened on August 15, which is very disappointing for the entire Afghans. It's very disappointing because their freedom is being taken back again after 20 years.
So Phil, that's a good point that you just mentioned. The women who didn't have the freedom, then they got it, then for it to be taken away from them. From what you could see, once the Americans came in, was there a hesitancy on behalf of the women to remove the burqas and to go to school and to live life? Like you see the women here in America, they go as they please, they drive, they walk by themselves, they don't need a man, an escort. They do as much as you can do. Was there a hesitancy on behalf of the women in Afghanistan once the country was liberated from the Taliban in 2001?
Of course. For the first 5 to 6 or probably 10 years, there was the hesitancy until the people are getting used to the new life and until the people are starting with the new mindset. There was a hesitancy. And after that, things started to change and women were more having the freedom than before. there was a hesitancy. There were and is still a group of closed-minded people who don't want the complete freedom for the women, females in Afghanistan. But I think 70 to 80%, they have their freedom in Afghanistan.
And how do you feel about it when you see women going to school and being able to participate in the same thing as men? What are your thoughts?
Well, I felt great when I was seeing women were trying to do what men can do. I support the equal rights, women and men. And I have a sister, younger sister. I have supported until the Taliban taken over the country. I have supported her to go to school. She went to high school, she finished her high school, and she wanted to continue the education and go to university, but this event has taken, and now she's very hopeless. And seeing also my mother having the freedom of going alone by herself to the store, to bazaar, bringing the grocery or buying something, that felt great for me. But you cannot do that during Taliban regime.
Yeah, just one of the many things that is so sad about this Taliban takeover of Afghanistan that we've seen. Fanu, you were just a little boy around 7-8 years old when the 9/11 terrorist attack happened. You mentioned it took the women about 5 or 6 years to really settle in with some of the new rules in Afghanistan. How quickly did you notice a change once the American military got over to Afghanistan with the way that the country was ran?
I quickly saw a lot of positive changes taking place after probably 2 or 3 years after when Americans came and the new government was created. The Hamid Karzai started to become the president. And I saw 2 to 3 years after 2001, I saw a lot of changes.
And Fanu, you actually served in the military over there in Afghanistan. You saw firsthand what was going on. I'm sure you knew about the Taliban presence that they still had. When Joe Biden and the Trump administration previously had announced that they were going to withdraw American forces from Afghanistan, were you immediately concerned, or did you think the Afghan army would be able to hold a lot longer than it did, and maybe even a permanent hold? Were you already skeptical if this situation could happen that we have seen?
Yes, that's a great question. I wasn't completely concerned about it because seeing the Afghan soldiers just loving the country, because I have been directly working with them, training them, and translating while training, and seeing how brave they are, how patriotic they are, that they are joining the army and fighting against these terrorist groups. I wasn't really concerned. I was concerned about their leadership, the leaders that they had. Most of them were just being leader just for the money. For the salaries, the high salaries they're getting and making the amount of money, I was concerned about the leadership. But from soldiers, I wasn't really concerned because I saw them, they're patriots. They were willing to fight and die for the country.
So we've heard that before, that the leadership, the people at the top, were there for the money. And now you're seeing the exact same thing and you were there. What are your thoughts on the President Ghani, who left the country when he saw that it was falling? Do you think that, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about him as a whole?
I'm very disappointed by him too. I believe he was just a traitor and he literally sold the country based on the reports that I've heard that he escaped the country, fled the country with more than $100 million of dollars in cash. I was very disappointed by him. And it's just very disappointing, not only for myself, but many other peoples in Afghanistan, they're disappointed by him. Right. He wasn't that great.
Right. And then to find out, which I didn't know about him, and I guess I should have just done my research, is that the guy was a college professor. I think from Yale or Princeton, one of the Ivy League schools, and they tapped him because he was vocal, outspoken, and saying that he knew what it would take to turn the country around, only to find out that he failed miserably, and he ran when he saw the country was falling. And now the other thing that I find interesting is that people are saying, well, we need to recognize the Taliban as being the official government. I'm like, wait a minute. Are you guys forgetting that in 2001, when we went there and when we took over, when the country did fall for the good and we eradicated the Taliban and they fled to the mountains, that a constitution was set up, was already written. And that was brought to our attention by Michael Johns, who came on the show. And he said, they already have a constitution. All that needs to happen is that it needs to be honored. So what are they talking about to get someone else? So this is how we create these puppet individuals. We put them in place and then they turn their backs on us. Look at Osama bin Laden. The exact same thing happened. When we went in to help him fight the Russians, what does he do? He becomes radicalized and then he turns cold on the Americans. This has got to stop. And I hope that the people that are listening will go do your research and realize that this is just a succession, that this was already in the works, that this is what happens when we go in, as opposed to achieving the mission and saying we did our mission, help them with their army, and then leave. But we have these military generals that are looking at, well, there's money here, let's stay here, knowing that the situation is unobtainable, knowing that it's corrupt. This has got to stop. And now left behind enemy lines are innocent people. And it shouldn't be that way. It should not be that way. So another question that I have for you. The Taliban, when they did take control, what was their purpose? What was their end game? What did they want to do when they took control back in 1996?
I believe, based on my knowledge, they believe that Afghanistan is an Islamic country. And it needs to be ruled by Islamic government. And they believe that they are really good Muslims.
Before you said they believe that it's an Islamic government, before they took control in 96, what was it? Was it a Muslim? A majority of the Afghanistanis Muslims?
Yes, of course. The majority was Muslims, but they were free.
Ah, okay. So yes, they were go ahead.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, the women were free and they couldn't see that. They don't want the woman to have the freedom as the men have.
So they came in 96 and instituted a more stricter form of Islam. Okay. Now, are you a Muslim?
Yes, I'm a Muslim.
And are there other religious sects that are there? I know that there are Christians that are there.
Yes.
And I can only imagine that they face a lot of persecution. So when the Taliban came in, their whole thing was, we want to change what's happening. We want to be more stricter. We want to bind the women. We don't want them going about. We want them to cover up.
Yes.
Are they being true to the tenets of Islam? Because if they're persecuting individuals and if they're torturing, some of the stories that I've read about the tortures, how can they say that they're being true to the religion of Islam?
I agree. They are not true. Because in Islam, in the book, in Quran, it says, if you take one person's life, you take in the entire world's life. So they're not true. They think they are. And I believe they're a political group and they're brainwashing people, kids in certain areas of the country. And that's how they're teaching and using the name of Islam, using that religion and just doing their mission and trying to accomplish their goals. I don't believe they are true to Islam.
Right. So right now we only hear about Kabul and we hear about Kandahar, but there are other parts of Afghanistan, other small towns. Are they also impacted by what's happening? And are they terrified? Because we only hear about Kabul and Kandahar, but I'm like, Afghanistan is the size of Texas where you live now. And there are people that are all over. What are their thoughts? Are they also concerned and afraid?
Of course. Yeah, the entire Afghanistan, they are all concerned. They're all living in fear. Based on my knowledge, Herat, Jalalabad, Bamiyan. These are all the other cities that we don't really hear, but people are living in fear. I have some relatives living in other cities too, that I'm also in contact, and they're all concerned, living in fear, and they're not happy with this Taliban regime, and they're just all disappointed and living in fear.
Right. So now you have the Taliban who's in control, or think they're in control. You have ISIS. We hear about ISIS. We hear about Al-Qaeda. And at some point, what we're hearing is that the two groups will start fighting amongst each other, trying to take control. In my opinion, they're all terrorists, and they're trying to destroy the country. Now you have also China. We hear reports that China is trying to infiltrate and to come in and work with the Taliban so that they can create this road from China through Southeast Asia and so on. Therefore, what are your thoughts about China now being moving on center stage?
That's a great question. As we all know, Afghanistan is a very strategic place, location in the Asia. It's very strategic. It's called heart of the Asia. And every country, especially the neighbor countries, their plan was just to use Afghanistan for their own good. Of course, China will use Afghanistan for their own good to build that road that you just mentioned through Afghanistan and connect China with other countries on the other side. And of course, Iran is using Afghanistan because Afghanistan's water, and many other countries, they're planning to do to use Afghanistan for their own good. They have never wanted to help Afghanistan for Afghanistan and Afghanistan's people's good. They just want to use Afghanistan for their own good.
Interesting. Another question. Someone just called to my attention that the State Department is now blocking, so they say, private rescue flights from leaving Afghanistan. Now, why would they do that, knowing that they failed? And if there are private individuals that are able to do what they can't do, why wouldn't they let them do it? The Biden administration created this disaster, this withdrawal, trying to rush out for a photo opportunity. And now you have people that are willing to go in and aid and assist. Why wouldn't they do it? What are your thoughts on that? I mean, having been there in the trenches and to hear something like that, that our State Department is now trying to prohibit private rescue missions.
Sure, that's a great question too. It's really insane. Because first of all, you are leaving people who work for you, you're leaving US citizens behind in a war zone, in a danger zone. Second, you're not letting and you're prohibiting these private efforts to evacuate those people at risk. It's really insane for me. And it's creating the questions, why would the US government, Department of State prohibit? And why they're not coordinating helping those private efforts to evacuate the people who are at risk there, the U.S. citizens, green card holders, and allies, interpreters, the people who work for the U.S. government and their families. That really create questions to me. And one of the questions that it creates, or one of the something that pop up to my mind, is that the United States, this administration, has done this in purpose. It was just part of their plan. That's what popping up in my mind.
Another question for you. The individuals that are coming here, and again, we appreciate your time and you being so forthcoming and sharing with their listeners your story, because people don't hear this. Americans don't hear this. And I think that they need to hear and understand what's happening. And coming from a person who has been there, grew up there as a kid, saw the American troops come in, saw them as liberators, and then wanting to give back, did what was necessary to give back. You were an interpreter, and then you received an SIV to leave. You left, not knowing what was going to happen, and now you want to get your families out. For those individuals who are coming here by the droves, we're trying to rescue them. One of the questions is that why wouldn't they want to go to other Muslim countries? Why would they want to come to the West, whose culture is completely different? And I would imagine a complete culture shock, especially seeing what Americans do, mainly during the summer when people go around half-dressed in bikinis, shorts, and whatnot. So it will be a major culture shock. So how do you think that those Afghanistanis coming here will feel, and why wouldn't they want to go to other Muslim countries?
I agree with that. First of all, I learned that many of the Afghans that they evacuated and they brought them here in the United States are not SIVs. They're just the regular people who went to the airport and they were let in. They were allowed in into the airplanes and they brought into the United States. That's the crazy part here, because SIV, you already worked with the U.S. government. You already worked with the foreign country. And because when I worked during those two or more than 2 years with the U.S. military, I've already gained probably 30 to 40% of their culture. I have learned, I got really interested into it, and I was willing to adopt their culture, American culture, and go to America, adopt, and just leave American or leave the American dream. But bringing normal people who are not SIVs or just they don't have any relation to American or American government, that creates question in my mind too. But I think the reason that everyone wants to come to America is the freedom you have here, the freedom of speech, that you can work, you can bring your dreams in reality. That could be the answer that I have in my mind.
Right. Now, so that's interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that. So everyone, more than likely, the individuals that are getting the SIVs, they have experienced the Western culture. So although it'll be a culture shock, but they have experienced it to a degree because they're working alongside our American soldiers. So that's interesting. Now, the other thing is that those countries that aren't receiving them, the Muslim countries, what are your thoughts on that as to why they wouldn't say, come here, we're closer as far as beliefs than a Western culture?
And that's a question I also have for those countries like Iran, Pakistan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey. Right now, the borders are closed and they're not allowing in Afghans. And I learned that those Afghans that they went to Pakistan after August 15, they're just being sent out back to Afghanistan. They're not allowed to rent a place to live in Pakistan, and they're not being supported. And that's a question that I have in my mind too, and it's very disappointing.
Okay, now here's the next question. And again, thank you for being so forthcoming. As the Afghanistanis come here, you have many Americans that are fearful that some of them will become ingrown terrorists, that they come here, they can't adjust to the culture, their young children will see the parents struggling, and then they will go on YouTube and come radicalized. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have that fear too. I have that fear in me too. What I would suggest to do is that whoever that you are bringing into the United States, they have to be vetted good. You have to do a deep background check. When I first applied for the SIV, it was a long process for me till I was granted with the SIV, with the visa. I have been gone through a very deep background checks all the way to 15 years or 12 years deeply to my family and my relatives. And they have done the biometrics to me. I have given the interviews and all the process that I have been gone through, that I know many people who just came the last 2 or 3 weeks, they're not going through those processes. And that's very risky for the American people and for the security of United States. And I think they need to go through all the processes and they need to be observed until they get their citizenships.
Then when you say the biometrics, that was like a rather a deep dive. Can you explain to us, just give us our viewers, or listeners rather, an understanding as to how deep is the deep dive and what, when we're saying biometric, because we know that the Taliban, they now have access to it. What is that all about exactly?
Yes. First of all, every U.S. military or any other country, every team, when they're going out or when they are detaining any suspect or detaining anyone, they are doing the biometrics. They are putting them, entering them into the system, getting their information. So they're all in the system. And people in Afghanistan government, when you are going, joining the government or any other agency, they're putting you into the biometrics. So they have a very big database of people and the people who have been arrested, detained. They're all into that biometric database. And I think that's a lot of information. And the majority of Afghans, they have been biometric, especially when you're going, applying for your ID, you're being biometric, and applying for your passport, you're just in the database.
No, we cannot say how much we appreciate you coming on the show tonight under the circumstances. Your parents are stuck under Taliban rule. We understand how horrifying that must be. What is the best place for people to reach out to you, or what message do you have for the Joe Biden administration after what we have seen tonight, and what would you like to see them do in the future?
Sure. you can find me on Twitter. That's the best place to reach out to me. And also my email address, fnumilat@gmail.com. If you know a way that it could help my family to get out, and if you have any requests, you can reach out through the email to me. And also my message to President Biden and his administration is to create a way as soon as possible. And first of all, get the U.S. citizens, green card holders, and then the allies, like translators, interpreters, and their families, at least their quick family members, like parents, sister, brothers, just evacuate them, get them out of the Afghanistan, get them out of the country to a safe place, because they are at risk. And working as an interpreter or working for the U.S. government is considered a big crime for the Taliban and many other terrorist groups in Afghanistan.
Yeah, once again, thank you, Fano. We hope we can follow up with you again in the future and get an update on what is happening. Thank you all for joining us tonight on another episode of After Dark with Rob and Andrew on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Find America Out Loud on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or Stitcher, or head on over to AmericaOutLoud.com for countless hours of content. Remember, stand for something or you will fall for nothing.